discussion.
Where? Upstairs.
Yeah, we start.
That's fine. You both go? Right.
Yeah, it's our assignment.
Right.
Okay. So,
when you're differentiating power series, it's actually really easy. You just differentiate term by term. The significance of the idea is that it actually works out so well. So, remember, a derivative is a limit. People write it in various ways. Mm-hmm. One way to write it is like this. Okay, so that's a limit. And a series, for example, a power series, is another kind of limit. Now, the thing is that when you have two different kinds of limits, what happens if you put them together? Well, the order can matter in general. So here's a little toy example of this. So the thing to the left means it works on the whole thing to the right. So this is the order of operations written with lots of unnecessary parentheses. Right? Okay, here, take H to 0, right? And...
But that's 1 to the
that's
power.
That's 1.
To that power, right?
Yeah. Well, N right now... N is just some number, right? We haven't taken the limit of N yet. N is still a number.
Considering N on the limit, we know for sure it's a positive number, positive integer.
Yeah, you're asking what happens when N is a big positive number.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If N is a positive number and you take this limit of H's, right, then you'll be fine, right? If this is 1 plus H squared cubed, the limit as h goes to 0 will be 1 plus 0 cubed, right? Because raising to a positive power is continuous at 1.
Well, in that case, like I just said, I'll be 50 and it stays 1. And the one you mentioned to the third power stays 1. Why? Why the answer stays at 1 every single case that I'm increasing the number of n? Because...
Well, 120 number is 1.
Yes. Yeah. And 1 to the 40 power is 1.
Yeah.
Well, you have times 1 times 1 times 1.
Yeah.
Just 1.
Yes.
How many times you do it, just...
It's
the same.
I mean, if you want to get fancy, you could define things in terms of an exponential on a logarithm, but...
That's different.
Yeah, one to any power is 1.
Yeah.
And so if we make the h squared really, really small before we make the n really large, for any particular n, if we make the h squared small enough, this gets as close as we want to 1. Right. And then... we're getting the same limit over and over again, no matter what the n is. So then we take this limit, and we just get 1, because for every n, it's already 1.
Yes.
Here, we make the n large first. Okay, so before we take the limit h to 0. So here you hold the h fixed on the inside. H is some small number, but it's not 0, right? We're taking a limit as h goes to 0. So h is close to 0, but it's not exactly 0. Square it, it's positive. So this is bigger than 1. Okay, if you take a really big power, right, of something bigger than 1, you get something really big. Now, if h squared is 0.01, then, you know, look at the millionth power of 1.01 or something. Right, huge. So you just get infinity for every non-zero h. Right? So if you take the limit of that, if you even have a definition for this, it would just have to be infinity if it's going to be anything, right? So the order of limits can matter. Okay. In general, it can matter. If you just have any old expression of two variables, and then you take limits with respect to each variable, the order in which you do the limits matters. So you might, you know, wonder, does it matter when I do a power series and the derivative thereof? Does it make a difference whether I do the limit of the infinite series first and then take the derivative of that? Or do I take the derivative first, right? Take the derivative of this, that's easy, it's just a polynomial, and then take the limit? Well, for power series, it's very nice. As long as you stay inside the open interval of convergence, you can do the limits in either order. So whichever one is more convenient for you is fine. Do the research. Now, at the endpoints of your interval of convergence, stuff could go wrong. I make no promises there. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But in the open interval of convergence, everything is fine. Then you can differentiate term by term. So there's several claims to spell out what all the implications are. So first of all, if you differentiate term by term, right, so we're taking the derivative with respect to x here. Why don't I write it like this to be extra clear, okay?
The first one was good.
You like the prime?
It's a good thing.
I mean, sometimes we take derivatives with respect to n, like when we're doing some L'Hopital's rule thing. That's why I was a little concerned that you might think I was differentiating with respect to n. So if you differentiate term by term, the series will still converge on the same open interval. Something might go wrong at one or more of the endpoints. I make no promises there. But the radius of convergence, hence the largest open interval of convergence, will be the same. You can prove this in the case where, say, it's a root test or a ratio test. If you take the derivative, you can prove that the limiting ratio doesn't change.
Why is it that the radius of convergence doesn't change when you take the derivative?
Well, I'll show you an example. But let me fill in the other points first.
Okay.
So that's the one thing. You can differentiate term by term, and you get another power series that converges at the same places except possibly the endpoints. The second point is that this is actually the same as if you had taken the derivative of the powers. Right? You sum this up for each x, and you get some number, right? But it depends on x, right? So you can think of this as a function of x, right? Okay.
So it's not all clear that this would even be differentiable. How do I know that, you know, the power series, if I graph it, you know, it's not going to be something that has corners or even discontinuities? Well, if you stay in the open interval of convergence, you're fine. Something might go wrong at the endpoints.
Do you test the endpoints as well, I guess, or not?
You can, right? We can look at some series. We can differentiate term by term, and we can see what happens at the endpoints. What happens is it can only get worse. If it diverged before we differentiate, it'll still diverge after. And also sometimes it converges at an endpoint, but then you differentiate term by term and it no longer converges. Right. So the third point is, okay, so the derivative exists, but can we compute it? Well, we can get very good approximations of it by differentiating term by term. Again, if you're in the interval of convergence. And the book states this as a theorem in section 9, and it puts in parentheses, here's this theorem, which we won't prove. I will prove it to my students, you know, and they'll read in the book a proof in the advanced calculus class I'm teaching this semester. Of course, that's a senior level class. It takes some work to prove it.
You'll be teaching in Cal 3 next semester, right?
That's true, yes.
Next level.
Okay, it's these two that are, I guess it's really, these are hard to prove. This one, the first bullet point is pretty easy to see in any particular example, at least. It might be hard to prove in general. But proving this, even for a particular example, can be tricky. So I'm not going to try and prove that. But I can show you examples of this.
I also have a handout. So if you believe that theorem over there, from that theorem follows an explanation for why is the exponential series 1 plus x squared over 2 plus x cubed over 6. Why are the sine and cosine series what they are? Why is the binomial series what it is? It's because the coefficients have to be what they are to make the derivatives come out right, to make the exponential function its own derivative, to make cosine have derivative negative sine have derivative negative cosine. It's not 6, I'll try that. So there I just go through a computation of the four major non-obvious series.
Do you need one more?
Yes. Yeah, okay.
The longest computation is the one with the binomial series. That one took like 2 pages. And I sort of cheated. I didn't actually go through the computation with sine and cosine because it's similar to the one with e to the x. I figure you can do it if you're interested. You can take a look at that.
Positive number, right? That we're subtracting.
One, two, zero, zero, zero.
1 minus 1 over n.
I think that's a parenthesis.
All of it to the end. Yeah. That's why it's 1 over 0, right? 1 over 0 is infinity. Infinity to 0 power. Anything to the 0 power would be 1. So is it 1?
I thought it was 0, but I thought it was like. When you do like 1 and minus 1 with infinity, we approximate it to 0.
I don't know that.
But technically, it's just a very small positive number.
A little bit more annotation to see the. To sit, writing very explicitly here, interchanging the limits, right, switching the order made a difference. With these power series, if you stay inside the open interval of convergence, you can switch the order of limits, which is usually very convenient to do. All right.
And so that, now let's see an example about that radius of convergence. Yes.
The interchanging limits is the intellectual significance of this. Let's see if we can apply this significant theorem. Let's see what happens. For example, okay, so kind of classic example, right, just look at the geometric series. This is interesting. Okay. The coefficients are just 1, right?
Yeah.
All right. And the radius of convergence is 1, right? We've looked at the geometric series for a long time now. So coefficients just 1. All right. And it's probably helpful to write it out when we differentiate it. You can write some stuff with sigma notation, but it's easy to get tripped up. So you need to, at least at first, write it with the ellipses, okay? I wrote it in this style, pattern kind of implicit. Okay, so if we believe that theorem, then at least for x smaller than 1, we can differentiate term by term. Because if you imagine stopping this, truncating it, then it's just a polynomial. If you stop at, say, x to the 4th, we know how to differentiate that polynomial, right? So this is what I'm doing. I'm imagining I truncate it and then take the derivative of the finite degree polynomial, right? And then I take the limit where the truncation point is moved out further and further out. So I've interchanged the limits because I believe that theorem. And let's see what I get here. 0 plus 1 plus 2x plus 3x squared plus 4x cubed, and so on. Okay? On the other side, right, I know another way to take this derivative, right? Just using calculus 1 stuff, right? This is just a power of a simple function, 1 minus x. So we can use a chain rule, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so we have to take the power rule. Okay, so subtract 1 from this power and multiply by that power, right? So that's just the power rule. And then, but the chain rule part is we have to multiply by the derivative of 1 minus x. Yeah. Okay, so the negative 1's multiply to 1, and so we get 1 minus x to the negative 2. So we learned something interesting here. Right? We learned that this series equals 1 over 1 minus x squared.
which is not all obvious, right?
No.
Okay, so we learned something new.
All right, and is the radius of convergence the same? Okay. We could check that. I mean, the theorem says it's true, but you could also check it manually. So what are the coefficients? I mean, well, okay, let's just do a ratio test. The coefficients are not ones, but they're linearly growing, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, so you'd be looking at the what are the ratios? You'll have 2x over 1 magnitude, 3x squared over 2x. Then the next ratio will be 4x cubed over 3x squared, and so on, right? And what is the limit, right? Well, okay, so in this sequence, let's see here. You have 2x, you have 3 halves x magnitude, after you cancel out 4 thirds x. Right? I mean, in general, right? Right, what would be the nth term here? Now it's a little easier to see the pattern. I think it would be, in terms of some kind of n, we might write something like this. And once this is like that, and so here we have n plus 1 over n. Okay, so see the general pattern here, right? This is just going to be a constant, right? We're taking a limit as n goes to infinity. Okay, so this is easy, right? That's 1 plus 1 over n, so that goes to 1 plus 0. So the whole thing just goes to x. Okay? So by the ratio test, if the limit of the ratio's magnitude is smaller than 1, we converge, and we converge absolutely. If it's bigger than 1, we diverge. And the test is inconclusive at the endpoints. We already know with this one that if you plug in plus or minus 1 exactly into x, the series diverges. And you can check that if you plug in exactly positive 1 for x here or negative 1 for x here, it still diverges. So things were already bad at the endpoints in this example, and they stay bad if you differentiate. Not getting better. So the radius of convergence is 1 again. The way I think about it is that when you take a derivative of x to the n and n comes out, right? You get your coefficients get multiplied by an n. So that's a linear growth on your coefficients. When you're doing a ratio test or a root test, you're really comparing to geometric series. You're thinking about exponential growth, exponential decay there. And multiplying by a linear factor is not going to change whether or not you eventually exponentially decay or whether or not you eventually exponentially grow. Right? It'll slow you down or speed you up, but ultimately you're either exponentially decaying or exponentially growing depending on whether x is bigger or smaller than some cutoff value, with something weird happening at exactly the boundary value.
But a linear factor won't change eventual exponential growth or decay. Like if you have e to the minus x, that's exponentially decaying. Multiplying by x, you know, you graph, you get a hump at the beginning, but then after that hump is over, it's exponentially decaying. It's just a linear factor, is how I think about it. Same radius of convergence. If you have exponential growth, of course, multiplying by a linear factor would just make that exponential growth a little faster. Okay, so you could say something like, in general, if you want to write things in sigma notation. If you try and capture this pattern, and so we differentiate term by term, okay? And so the first term, the A0 term, gets killed, right? Because it's just a constant term. A0 times x to the 0, A0 times 1, that's a constant. So the first term is eliminated. And then you get this. Again, it's hard to follow in the sigma notation when you see it for the first time. Maybe I'll put the N in front. I'm actually going to write it here. See? Okay, so you differentiate the A0 goes to nothing. You differentiate A1x, you get A1, right? That's the N equals 1 term of this formula, right? If you plug in 1, you get 1 times A1 times x to the 1 minus 1. X to the 0 is 1, so it's just A1. Then the next term will be 2A2 times x to the 2 minus 1, x to the 1. Another way of writing the same thing, it's kind of like making a U substitution, but you're doing it with, instead of an integral of a series, start the index at 0, okay? Right? And it's going to be the exact same thing when you write it out, but you want the N equals 0 term to give you A1. So how do you pull that off? Well, if you write, you have to write things a little tricky. You have to write it like this. Basically, everywhere there's an N, replace it with an N plus 1. If you want your series to be indexed starting at N equals 0, you just have to do a little substitution. To start one earlier, you just add 1 to the N inside the formulas. And you can see that if you plug in 0 here, you get 0 plus 1 times A sub 0 plus 1. So that's 1 times A1 times x to the 0. X to the 0 is 1, so that's A1. And then at n equals 1, you'll get 1 plus 1, 2, times A sub 1 plus 1, A2, times x to the 1, x. So it all works out. So you can write it in a number of ways in sigma notation, as is convenient. Okay. Let's see if you can figure this out.
Do you want us to give you a series?
It's equal. In the limit of adding up all those fractions, I get a specific number. What is the number?
1/n squared? No. 1 to the n.
It would be
n. Isn't like when you're...
It would be n over n to the power of n.
Yeah, I was thinking of that.
Well, yeah, we can write in sigma notation, sure. You could write maybe...
Yeah, I feel like if it goes to e or
something like that. Yeah, does it go to e, pi, what? I claim there's a simple formula for the final limit value of that series. Very simple. It's one step removed from what we did over there, right? You'll notice we have a, we have something kind of like that. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, right? And we have powers of x. What's the difference between this and this?
We have that power.
Hmm?
Is it the power? Well, it's to the end, I think.
To the end. You have n times an nth power of a half. Right?
Yeah, it's 1/2. Yeah.
Right. So like the third term is 3 × 3/2. There's a slight mismatch here. Here I have 3 times not the third power of x, but the second power of x. We're one off. How could we make them match? What change would we need to make?
N minus 1.
How could we make these powers, you know, one higher so that it was 1 times x to the 1, 2 times x to the 2, 3 times x to the 3, 4 times x to the 4,
like
so they would match.
To the power of n plus 1? Or
well, it's going to be a different series, but how do we get there?
You just put the n minus 1 at the... Like, isn't it just a simple change of the...
Would it be like, can't you just, like, start it off at 1 instead of at 0?
And we need another trick. We have... Fundamentally, however we write this in sigma notation, there's this mismatch, right? 2 and 1, 3 and 2, 4 and 3.
Times x.
Times, multiplied by x.
Oh, that's good.
Okay? That sounds good. Okay. And we know this works for any x smaller than 1. Okay. So at a half, we'll have a half is smaller than 1. So we should get the sense that we have 1 plus 2 times a half squared plus 3 times a half cubed and so on, which is what we want, right? That's a fourth, that's 8. Okay? Okay, so the answer is that our funny sum here of n over 2 to the n from 1 to infinity is a half divided by 1 minus a half quantity squared. And of course we can simplify that, right? It's a half over a half squared. Okay, so cancel out a half and that's 1 over a half, which is 2. Okay. So now if you don't believe it's that easy, you might, try adding up 5 or 10 of these terms and see if you're getting 1.99 something, right? See if numerically adding up a bunch of these terms actually does get you close to 2. If what we did is valid, then that numerically should be able to confirm this with approximation two.
Well.
So that's where term-by-term differentiation can really shine. There's lots of series where
you don't have any idea how you would get it from nothing, but if you start taking derivatives and then playing around, sometimes you have to multiply by an x or something,
you can actually get the answer.
Converges to around 2.
It should. Add up the first 9 terms that I wrote there and see how close it is.
If you're writing a program for your computer or calculator, this sigma notation stuff can come in handy, and it can also come in handy if you have to do some kind of convergence test, maybe at the boundary or something. You need a formula for n, but it's a lot easier, in my experience, to see what's going on if you just write it out with the ellipses, the dot dot dots, and do each term. Less likely to get some little mistake. To match this, I have powers of a half. If you think of this as n over 2 to the n is n times a half to the n.
It's n times half.
Yeah. Oh. See, that's the trick. I turn the division by powers into multiplication by powers by thinking of a half instead of 2. And once I have multiplication by powers, well, I've got a power series.
But isn't that like the geometric series, because that's a half to the n?
Well,
or could you write that like that?
Well, but it's, there's this changing multiple, right?
Yeah.
It's not a constant multiple of the geometric series.
Okay, yeah. This is n, n.
Yeah. If this was just, 17, 17, 17, 17, every numerator, right, then it would just sum up to 17.
Yeah.
One half over 1 minus a half, but we ended up with a squared in there because of the way the numerators are changing, which match how the coefficients change when you take a derivative. Try and figure out.
Just a question. So this is the derivative of the series, or like over here we're looking.
Well, we already did the derivative, and then the new trick was to multiply by x.
Yeah.
Right, we add the derivative of the geometric series. I'll put it up again.
So again, this is derivative of 0 is right.
Yeah, and now I'm going to take two derivatives.
Okay, so we have that already. Then the derivative, we figured that out. And it was, if you write in sigma notation, it would look, you could write it like this, or like this.
Kind of like the two ways you could write it over here. Depends on whether you want to start the index at 0 or at 1.
But again, if you just write it with the dot, dot, dot style, you're less likely to get confused. Because both of these are two ways of writing the same thing, which is 1 plus 2x plus 3x squared plus 4x cubed. Da, 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 da. This has derivative 0, this has derivative 1, derivative 2x, derivative 3x squared, and so on. You can write the 0 at the beginning if you want, right? But
okay.
I mean, it doesn't change anything. But yeah, it's a little more obvious than yeah. How I get.
Yeah.
I start this one at 1 because if I start at 0, right, then I'd have 0, and then here I'd have x to the minus 1, which would just be.
Cause confusion, but what's supposed to happen is x equals 0, right?
Okay. Now, I want to get squares, so I'm going to differentiate again. Okay? So, think about this, let's see here. 1 minus x to the negative 2. That's what this thing is. Take the derivative. Okay, so power rule again. And then chain rule. Okay. So this is a minus 1. So you get 2 over 1 minus x to the third. Okay. And that has to equal the term-by-term differentiation. Differentiate these again. Two, if you like, I can write a 0, right? 0 plus 2 plus 3 times 2x plus 4 times 3x squared, and we can see what the pattern is going to be, right? The next one would be 5 times 4x cubed, and so on. Okay. Okay. So we got. Okay, so there's a little problem in that they're not quite. These aren't quite squares, are they? I'd be hoping for like a 4 squared that I could multiply by the square of a half. But actually, I want 4 squared times the 4th power. Right? I've got another issue. But we could make those. We could at least make that match up by multiplying by an x. Of course, there's the other problem. It's not really 4 squared. It's 4 times 3. Okay, how can I fix that? Well, what if we do a little addition here?
See, if I say I take that 2x, for example, and I add it to this 3 times 2x, see, will that do it? Not quite. You want to add 3x to it. Alright. So this is what I want to do. I want to take this and I want to fix it. Let's see here. That's what I'd like to add next.
You're going to have to tell me the ratio, right?
But the problem is, where is that series? What is that series?
Yeah. Damn it.
Okay. Okay, well, I can get this series from that one. Okay. What I can do is, see here, I have 3x squared, 4x cubed, right?
Yes.
So I could, if I could get rid of those terms, which I'm not terribly excited about, then I could just take this and divide it by x. Right? And I would have what I want down here. Okay? So I could take this, subtract off that stuff, divide by x, and then, so this will get canceled, and then I'll have 3x plus 4x squared, and so on. Okay. So I'll get a trick like that. So actually, I can have an exact formula for this thing for any particular x smaller than one that I plug in terms of that. And okay, let's see if we can put this together now. Okay, so we have this thing, that formula, plus this thing with that formula, equals this thing. And we, let's see, unless, I guess there's a 2 that came along for the ride, didn't it? You know, maybe I should keep the 2. If you'll forgive a little change here, let's keep the 2. I think that's actually going to be better. Yeah? Because then I'll get 2 times 2. Yeah. I like that. So it's a 2 squared. Okay, so I just subtract the 1 and divide by x, and I get this. And then we're almost there. If we can multiply by x squared, then this will become 2 squared times x squared, 3 squared times x cubed, 4 squared times x to the 4th, 5 squared times x to the 5th. So you can do lots of tricks like this. Okay. So what have I done? I've taken my 2 over 1 minus x cubed, and then I added that funny thing. And then I multiply all that by x squared. And I'm almost there, except I'm missing my first term. Well, that's not a problem. We can just throw in an x. I'm just adding an x at the end. Okay. And you could simplify this a tad now. There's going to be a common denominator here. And then you get 2x squared plus... one minus x. You could simplify it even more. And then here, actually, if we have minus 1 over x times x squared, which is just minus x plus x, so those actually cancel. And then here, you have another cancellation. The 2x squared cancels with that one.
So you have positive 1 over 1 minus x to the top power? Or, yeah, right? More or less.
As long as I didn't make some algebra mistake here. No, there's no 2 there.
Oh.
Yeah. Watch out for that. Yeah, it looked too easy.
Yes.
I knew it didn't simplify that much. Okay, so we have x squared plus x over 1 minus x cubed. I got it right?
Yeah. I think so. Let's see.
So, if you believe all that algebra, then you should believe that this thing equals a half squared plus a half over 1 minus a half cubed. So that's a fourth plus a half, which is 3/4. And then this is an eighth. So 3/4 times 8, which is 6.
Wow. That's interesting.
So if we did all the algebra right, then you should be able to add up the first, 50 terms or whatever and get a number very, very close, but ever so slightly less than 6. Okay. So that's the power of this method. You take derivatives, often of a simple series like the geometric series, and I'm running late, aren't I?
Yes.
Okay.
Let me just give you one short thing. If we were simply coming. Five.